Hello, and welcome to the Beacon Group's Noon Step Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Kirsten. I'm an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you're new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. And if you're new or not so new, and you're looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you've had a spiritual experience and you're willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker today will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I have asked Sarah to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sarah?
Where are they, Ken? Chat?
I'm coming, hold on.
All right.
Bear with me.
Yep.
Get back.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Sarah, grateful recovering alcoholic. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Move up. Okay, five. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Today we will hear a talk on step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And please give a warm welcome to our friend Lauren S. from Rumson, New Jersey. Welcome.
Hey.
Good to see you.
Everybody hear me?
Good. Yep.
All right. Hi, guys. My name is Lauren. I am an alcoholic. It's good to be here. It's good to be sober. And thank you, Kim, for asking me to share. I think I shared a year or two ago. I don't know how long it's been, but I know Kirsten asked me. I've been on this meeting before. I think it was during the pandemic, but it's good to be here. And it's always a honor in to serve AA in any capacity. So again, thank you. So I have a sobriety, I'll give you the baseball card stats first. I have a sobriety date of October 15th, 1995. I have a home group. We've been gifted. We meet in Fairhaven, New Jersey on Tuesday nights. We have a beginner's meeting at 6:15, followed by an open speaker meeting at 7:30. And we are still hybrid. So if anybody's ever sitting at their computer on a Tuesday night, you could look us up on the meeting guide. I have a sponsor. I sponsor men. I am a service sponsor. And I also have a service sponsor. So I am thankfully in all three legacies of our program. And I have been for some time. And it's really part of what keeps me sober and active is those service commitments. Because as some of you know, when we get and stay sober, life gets pretty good and pretty big and pretty busy. And it's funny that we're on step two, because just like everything else in my sobriety and in my life, my definition of insanity has changed over the years that I've been sober, just like everything else has changed. And I don't so much suffer from the insanity of alcohol, the physical intake of the drink. I did suffer from that a long, long time before I surrendered on October 15th in 1995. And, you know, the experiment of that first drink, you know, AA has been in my life. I was first introduced, my first meeting was in 1986. And after that exposure, I was in and out for 9 years, playing with the insanity of the experiment of the first drink. And when I was presented with step two, I've worked with guys who are almost offended about being insane. Like, oh, you know, I have a drinking problem, but, you know, restore me to insanity. If you're going to be restored to insanity, then it's assumed that you are insane to be restored. Now, after a few questions and answers, a few mini quick inventories, you know, with a newcomer, you can quickly point out, just like it was pointed out to me, my insanity of my behavior around alcohol. So, you know, not reacting, not making rash decisions like maybe other people who have suffered dire, extreme, even tragic consequences directly related to the intake and the drinking behavior around alcohol, and still, with no fight or reason, still choosing to take a drink again and start the whole cycle. So the doctor's opinion, you know, the clarification of drinking differently and reacting differently, I have all that. I do not react the same as the normal temperate drinker, as our book says, to alcohol. When I digest alcohol, something happens to me that may not happen to my brother, or may not happen to my dad. I lose control in choice. I lose control in behavior, and generally wind up with stitches and or handcuffs, usually both. So I've been at stitches. I've been in handcuffs in a long, long time. So there's a direct relation to physical sobriety and no stitches and handcuffs for me. I like no stitches and handcuffs much better. I've been on a good roll now for almost 28 years. So, you know, I'm looking to put another day under my belt. So here I am. So the alcoholic insanity I do not suffer from today. I have do not even have a drinking problem today. I haven't had ingested. I haven't taken a drink in 28 years. Drinking is certainly not my problem. I have another insanity problem that's, you know, in between these two ears. So that is what I work on today. When I talk with my sponsor and I read with my network and we text and have phone conversations, and when we sit around having coffee, we don't discuss alcohol much anymore. What we talk about is our decision making, what kind of men we are, what kind of fathers we are, what kind of husbands we are, what kind of humans we are, not only in Alcoholics Anonymous, but how do I behave outside of the rooms, which is just as important as all the work that I do inside of AA. So the insanity that still can get me is the fact that I haven't had a drink in almost 28 years. I have beautiful children. I have a beautiful wife. I have a nice home. I've built a great business that's been 27 years old. Do I need to pray? Do I need to make 5 meetings a day? Can I skip home group? Do I still need to work with newcomers? You know, those are the alcoholic thoughts for me, the insane idea that I am done, that I am okay. You know, Bill Wilson talks about, you know, good being the enemy of the great. And certainly for a guy like me, I can relate to that. I mean, I'm good. Am I going to drink today? Probably not. Am I going to, you know, smack my kids around? Am I going to rob a bank? Am I going to get a DWI? Am I going to, you know, rob a store? Probably not. However, I still have that, you know, these steps are always backed up by the one after. Like step two is backed up by step three. And when I make that decision in step three, because I admit that I have no power and that I'm insane and that I need a power greater than myself to restore me to some kind of normal living, some kind of relief, some kind of sound mind and thinking, some kind of direction, you know, being lost in the alcohol insanity is one thing in the beginning. But trust me when I tell you, you can burn your life to the ground without a drink, without a program, without a God, without one drop of alcohol. And through my almost 3 decades of sobriety, I've experienced things that's almost embarrassing that you cannot blame alcohol on. So I'm sober now more than half my physical life, right? Sober almost 28 years, just turned 54 years old. I have several fourth and fifth steps that have nothing to do with the intake of alcohol. Can't blame any of that behavior on being drunk or blacked out. So I still suffer from the alcoholic mind. I still have instincts run wild. I still want what I want when I want it. I still have insane ideas around instincts. So if I don't have a network, if I'm not plugged into a power greater than myself, if I'm not in the middle of AA, that insanity can run amok in my life, dead sober, dry as a bone. So the insanity that I'm talking about that has changed over the years is not so much around the first drink. Now, you know, of course, always and forefront is to be sober and not take that first drink. That is always, you know, the main idea, you know, behind any chance of dealing with any kind of emotional sobriety or any kind of alcoholic insanity. If I take that drink, if I succumb to that compulsion or desire, then I'm toast, then I have no shot. But if I maintain the physical sobriety and I am connected, I can deal with, you know, the insane thoughts and work through them and, you know, work with a sponsor or a network. In my case, even a wife sometimes. I am blessed to have a wife in this program. And You know, we speak the language of the heart in this house, and our whole life is, you know, a lot of it's built around service and love through Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm lucky for that. But insanity, you know, of alcohol, I've been removed from. You know, my car has a windshield. It's got that little sticker on the windshield. The glove box matches the stuff in my pocket. All that good stuff that I didn't used to have when I was drinking. None of it matched. I was lucky about a license plate on my car. I did have a car without a windshield that I drove around and got pulled over many times in disbelief from the police officer. So I don't have to worry about, you know, lying about where I'm going, or, you know, making excuses of where the money is or the paycheck, or, you know, hiding drinks and hiding bottles and all that kinds of stuff. That has been removed. That went away when I put down the alcohol. What didn't go away was, you know, the alcoholism, right? The drinking is 1% of my problem. I learned that in the beginning. The drinking is about 1% of my problem. The problem is me, how I react, how I perceive, my ideas of what maybe sanity is, you know, not seeing the whole picture because, you know, I'm skewed by selfishness and self-centeredness and, you know, relationships, instincts run wild, all that stuff in life that I never was very good at. And for a little while, maybe alcohol helped, or at least if it didn't help, it you know, blotted out any kind of pain or fear or consequences of my inability to operate or think that I could operate like anyone else. You always hear it from the podium. I feel like everyone else had a manual how to live, and I didn't get the manual. And I was in fear, and I had the hole, and I was scared. And when I took a drink, you know, I've arrived. And, you know, my story is similar to that. You know, I didn't come from an alcoholic family. Well, I didn't used to think I did until I realized I was in it. So I guess I did come from a dysfunctional family because I was part of the family. I was in a lot of rehabs when I was young, and that was always a question. Do you come from a dysfunctional family? I'd say, no, my mom and my dad were married a long time. My dad was a surgeon. Neither of them were alcoholics. They said, well, weren't you in the family? I'm like, yeah, I am in the family. Then you definitely have a dysfunctional family. So I learned that, you know, I have a few friends who came from dysfunctional neighborhoods. So I just came from a dysfunctional family because I was part of it. You know, in recovery, there are, you know, for me, there were phases of, you know, how did I come to believe in a power greater than myself? Well, I was blessed that, you know, I'm born and raised in a Jewish religion. And I didn't have any kind of prejudice like our book talks about. I love Bill's story. I love his step two experience. I love his experience with Ebby comes to see him and he pushes the drink. I got to sit at that table at Stepping Stones where Ebby pushed the gin back and Bill says, what's gotten into you? You know, and he says, I have religion. And Bill was aghast and he, you know, said, oh, you know, well, first an alcoholic crackpot, now a crackpot about religion. But he planted the seed. And later on, you know, the seconds and inches, none of us would be on this Zoom call. None of us would probably be sitting here. Maybe none of us would be alive. And Ebby says to Bill, why don't you try your own idea of God? And Bill said, I think I can do that. That makes sense to me. And, you know, later on in that hospital bed, he had his white light experience And again, seconds and inches, Silkworth comes in. Maybe any other doctor, any other time, says, "You're nuts, dude. You're on the belladonna treatment. You got your brain's whacked out. You don't say a peep about this. We forget this happens. The nurse is going to come in and whack you up with some Thorazine. I don't know what you're talking about, hills and breezes and white lights." But he doesn't say that. He says, "Hey, man, I don't know what happened to you, but something is better. Something has changed. Anything is better than what you were. Hold on to it. Believe in it." And he gives Bill his affirmation that he's not nuts. Now, if he says that, if it goes any direction in the other way, I'm not sitting here. You're not sitting here. Seconds and inches. I get goosebumps when I think about it. So here we are now, whatever, almost 90 years later. And what I practice is I try to talk to my sponsees. I try to talk to the newcomer about the sickness of the mind of the alcoholic, that the insanity that, you know, after the consequences of our drinking life, that we still choose to pick up a drink. Now, some guys are wealthy and they have houses and they still have their wife and they have cars in the driveway. And it takes a little longer to get to the idea of how they're insane. Most people don't think they're insane when their bills are paid and that their wife hasn't left them. But when we use the book, when I use the big book and I go down the questions and the path to their behavior around alcohol, their dishonesty around alcohol, the consequences that they get when drinking that may not be financial, that may not be marital, but when they feel when they can get a little honest and they say, "Oh yeah, now I see what you're talking about," they see how their behavior around alcohol has been insane. That a normal person with sound logic and sound reasoning would never pick up a drink again after what someone just went through because of being intoxicated or losing control or not knowing when to stop or blacking out, etc. So I identified, my sponsor had me identify with the insanity of the drink. And that took care of that. But what he said after that was that I am still not off the hook, that I have the mind of an alcoholic, that yes, just because you identify with the powerlessness and the insanity of the allergic reaction you have to alcohol means nothing. You have to find a power greater than yourself. You have to surrender and give up and try a new direction, a new way of living, replace some old ideas, be open-minded. And are you willing to do this? Are you willing to believe that I believe all the stuff that you hear and all the stuff that we read was presented to me? And I was. And I was, again, like I told you, I was blessed that in my childhood, I was not pounded by brimstone and fear, that the God I was introduced to was actually, you know, a loving God. We were actually, you know, talking about the chosen one, the chosen people in temple and stuff. And I remember being in this, I was in Short Hills, New Jersey, which is a prominent, wealthy town. And we were members of this temple. And I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, which makes my brother 9 or 10 years old. And we were sitting in the giant synagogue, this architectural masterpiece. I remember Friday nights, my mom with the diamonds and the fur coat, the old ladies were getting dropped off in limos. And it was Friday night, you know, we had to go to temple, our little clip-on ties, and we're sitting in there, and the guys, the rabbis talking about the chosen one. And I used to say to my brother, what is it? What are we chosen for? And he would say, "We're chosen to be doctors or lawyers," you know? And I'd laugh. And then I would grow up and I realized it wasn't that far off, right? So, you know, if they don't own the us Jews, if we don't own the business, we own the building, right? So a lot of fun jokes that I grew up with. So I had, I didn't have fear. I didn't have fear wrapped around this idea of a power greater than myself, AKA God, if you will. Did not have that fear. So I was blessed with that. A lot of times I feel like I had a jump start because a lot of the guys I work with have to get through this religious upbringing that they had. A lot of bad experiences, a lot of fear, a lot of resentment, a lot of things that I got to work through to get to the point where they're willing, to believe. So, I got through that and I understood. Again, I was pretty beat up. I was in and out for 9 years only, and I don't mean 90 days. I was, I had 3 years one time, 18 months. I don't recommend it. It was awful. I could work step one and I could hang out in the fellowship side of the program and I could really, attain physical sobriety, but I never got into any kind of power. I never got into any kind of working faith. I never got into any kind of, spiritual relief. I was basically physically sober, not so much white knuckling it, but eventually it would be. And then when the compulsion or the acid test, it was just me and the drink. And that's it. And I would never win. It was a no-brainer. I would take the drink and off to the races I was again. And it wasn't even a belief sometimes. When I think about it, and I've done my inventories, it was almost like a screw it, a surrender to the disease. It wasn't even like, okay, this time I'm not going to get in trouble. I'm not going to drink all night. Not going to not call or go home or any of that. It was just like, I feel like drinking and whatever happens, happens. Who gives a shit? Sorry for my language. Who cares? And, that's obviously a form of insanity. Again, knowing where I came from and, the head full of AA and the belly full of alcohol is brutal and it's awful. And I don't recommend it. So my final surrender, on October 15th, 1995, it was not a white light experience. I've had plenty of white light experiences with police and surrendering, but this was a real surrender. This was the surrender, unconditional surrender, where I was to get off the debating society. I was going to get all the way in and sit all the way down. I was going to open the book. I was going to take the suggestions. And I wasn't allowed to say, I know. I know. I know. I used to be like, I know. I know. And I didn't know anything. I knew how to get drunk. I knew how to not work the steps. I knew how to be a taker. I would sit in chairs I didn't set up. I would eat cookies I didn't bring. I would drink coffee I didn't make. And I was a taker in AA. And these days, things are a lot different. And I use my service commitments. I use my sponsees as safety, as bubble wrap, as the seatbelt of AA to stay in the middle. Because again, by myself, with my bright ideas, I could settle back into, I think I know what I need. I think I know what you need. I think I know what my wife needs. I think I know what everybody needs. And I can get back into, insane living, because that guy in the four step, he's still in here. He's still there. He's never going to be gone for good. God willing, and thankfully he's way, way down there, below layers and layers of good and service and love and AA. But if I lose my way, and I've seen it a million times in other people, it does not take long for that insane thinking to come back. And the insane thinking is usually followed by poor choices, insane behavior, and people with and without a drink, with long-term sobriety, are in a lot of trouble. And I don't want to be that guy. So here I am today. And, I'm glad to be here. I'm guess I'm good on time. And thank you for having me. And that's all I have. Thank you.